Welcome to the Dharma Talk. The title of my talk tonight is Coming to the Heart of Things. And it's a continuation of the emptiness teachings that we have had so far on the retreat. I will do my best to make the teachings interesting. However, warning, sometimes the emptiness teachings are a little hard to follow, and the beginning of the talk may be like that, but it gets a little easier as the talk goes on, I think. And hopefully by the end of the talk, you will have some understanding of what the emptiness teachings reveal and some of the misunderstandings about the teachings will be hopefully clarified. So firstly, no, sorry, because I can't see them from there. It's the impermanence of the eyesight. I actually can't see you very well either with the glasses on, and I bought some multifocals, but I can't really use them, so I'll be looking at you and seeing something blurred. So I want to begin with one of my very favorite verses. And the teaching of non-clinging is, of course, the foundational teaching of the Dharma. And so when we want to understand the heart of peace, when we want to understand the depth of the Dharma teachings, it really rests on non-clinging. Non-clinging to self inwardly and non-clinging to anything else externally. The Buddha put it this way. He said, having nothing, clinging to nothing, that is the island. That is the island. There is no other. That is nibbana, I tell you. The total ending of aging and death. So we are asked to cling to nothing, not even to our fears, not even to this life of ours, nor to that which is most precious to us. For we clearly see that when we cling, there's extraordinary pain that follows. There's heartbreak in the face of the inevitable losses in this life. So the final line in that verse was the total ending of aging and death. So the challenge for us is to really know for ourselves the unaging, to know for ourselves that which is not bound to time. And the total ending of death is to really understand for ourselves the deathless teachings of the Dharma. So as I go through the talk, hopefully this will become clear. And the reason I'll speak also about some events in my life that have been particularly painful. And the reason I'm talking about them is to help or to convey the wisdom and understanding that can arise from right in the midst of a very painful situation. Because to know the deathless Dharma is the only comfort that I know in this life as we face all the different struggles and the turmoil and the difficulties, as you all know so well here. So when the teachings are understood, the emptiness teachings are not barren. They're not vacuous or desolate. It's not that kind of emptiness. So it doesn't mean the absence of that. What it means is the absence of any clinging to me and mine. It's the emptiness of self-existence. It's the emptiness of inherent existence. This is what is meant. So for the last two nights, we heard both lovely talks on the emptiness of self, of looking at the whole construct and notion of self, being curious, seeing into it, exploring, looking at our assumptions, approaching this whole idea of self and me and mine and my life with a sense of lightness, not taking ourselves so seriously. And of course, in the instructions, there have been many reports of the self loosening up and a kind of breakthrough and a breaking free from the ordinary perception we have of the way we see life and the way we see ourselves. So seeing the emptiness of self and the emptiness of all things brings release from sorrow and pain and suffering. And no matter what background and culture we come from, we are touched. We are not different. Our humanity is indivisible. So all of the things that we cling to as self, our identity, religion, culture, nationality, the self gets wrapped around all of this. And we simply have to see that that's a mechanism of mind. And if we can stop clinging to that, what comes forth is this extraordinary release of the heart, where we really see the indivisible nature of all things. We see and know and understand the humanity of the other. So over the days of the retreat, we've been asked to be with the immediacy of our experience and really to see into it. So we've been asked to see, to hear, to stand, to walk, to eat, to sit, without adding on the constructed self. They say in Asia that the self is like a line drawn on water with the finger. So we need to not take ourselves so seriously, to see that there's a way of being that is not from a narrow perspective. So self, of course, is impermanent too. It arises, ceases, fades, disappears. So it's not so hard to see that the self has no inherent existence because it's shifting, changing, flowing, never the same one minute as the next. Thailand's great teacher of emptiness, one of my teachers, Ajahn Buddhadasa, says, in the most fundamental sense, emptiness simply means emptiness of the attachment to me and mine. And that, of course, applies even to those we are most attached to. Our children, our family, our friends, our partners, those we love. He goes on to say, the mind will simply be a mind in its natural state. This is the natural nirvana, the natural freedom. Free from attachment and ignorance, because it has seen the emptiness of all things. So when we really see that, we see and touch into the luminous nature of the heart-mind. And this is quite a revolutionary release. And then me and mine, my life, my body, my perceptions, my feelings, my thoughts, my views, my opinions don't have so much hold over us anymore. And when this sense of clinging to me and mine ceases, and the clinging is the operative word, then we have no desire to harm ourselves or another. So self-hatred, self-criticism, self-loathing ceases, as do actions which harm others. So when we really see clearly, we touch another way of being that's not based on self-interest, it's not based on greed, it's not based on wanting mind, but we have a more expansive view of life. And now I want to read you some of the teachings, and I know that many of you would have heard them before. But sometimes people say to me, why didn't you tell me that before? And I say, I've been saying nothing else for the last 20 years. But still, people say, if you just said that before, I wouldn't have had all these miserable retreats, and so on. So here goes. This is from the text. Therefore, monks, he's talking to seekers on the path, so that's all of us, any kind of material form, whatever, should be seen as it actually is, with proper wisdom thus, this is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself. Any feeling, whatever, should be seen with the same proper wisdom, so feelings are not mine. This I am not, this is not myself. And the same with perceptions, the same with thoughts, mental formations of any kind, and even the same with consciousness. He says it should be seen with proper wisdom. This is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself. So we're not grasping, we're not appropriating, we're not making anything mine. And when we really see this, there's a release, life loosens up. There's another story in the text. The Buddha and his followers are in northern India at Savatthi. And he says, he just gives an example. He says, suppose people were carrying off grass and sticks and branches and foliage. So someone's sweeping up all the sticks and leaves. Suppose they were carrying them off to burn them. Would you think people are carrying us off? Or burning us or doing with us as they wish? And the listeners say, of course not, because it's an absurd example. Of course not. And then he says, so too, bhikkhus, form is not yours, feeling is not yours, perception is not yours, volitional formations are not yours, consciousness is not yours. Abandon them. Abandon them means give up clinging to them. When you have abandoned them, that will lead to your welfare and happiness. So our task is one of non-clinging. And then we really start to see the emptiness of self. So emptiness of self is the very first part of the understanding of the emptiness teachings. By emptiness, we mean there is no fixed, existent, inherent nature or essence. We like to think that we have essence, but when we look with a meditative mind, we actually can't find it anywhere. And I'd just like to make a few points about emptiness, just to clarify some misunderstandings. Emptiness is not to take up a standpoint or a position with regard to experience. Emptiness is also empty. We tend to make a thing out of emptiness. We think of it as a noun, as something. It's said in the tradition that those who cling to emptiness are incurable. There's no hope for them. So watch out. Watch out, Rudder. So lack of inherent existence means that a thing, an object, does not exist just by itself. That includes us. It includes every single object. It also includes all the immaterial things that we can think of, our thoughts, ideas, concepts. Things come into, or an event occurs, let's say, due to causes and conditions. And I discovered in the back of one of these books, this little book by Krishnamurti on God, something I'd written myself. I'll read it to you. It's on this theme of the emptiness of all things, one of my favorite topics, of course. It goes like this. All phenomena arises and comes into being as the result of causes and conditions. All things, all events occur as the result of causes and conditions. And, of course, when we start to see this in our everyday life, we see that when our relationship ends and we're heartbroken, that rather than have the self view and think I'm not good enough or it's the other person's fault that my relationship ended, we begin to take it less personally, and we see all the causes and conditions that have contributed to the relationship in the first place. And when we start to take the personal out of it, it unburdens the mind. It really does. So each object we see, each person sitting here, everything we see around us, is by nature dependently arisen. This applies to all the non-material dharmas as well. So everything you can think of. Because something's dependently arisen, it's devoid of existing independently. Because it exists in dependence upon other things, it doesn't exist in and of itself. That means each object, person, thing is devoid of existing independently. So it doesn't exist independently. And in Dharma language, we just simply say it's empty of self-existence. So this is what's meant by emptiness. It's the absence of inherent existence. And when we begin to see this and see life unfolding due to causes and conditions, the mind is relieved. We can put down the burden of self. We can put down this huge burden that we carry. It's an extraordinarily liberating teaching when we just see it, when we just understand it. So some of you will think, oh, this sounds very boring, very dull, very bleak. How could I want to understand emptiness? How could emptiness, or the understanding of this, or how could this word in particular convey the pinnacle of the Dharma teachings? It is, of course, not the only word that the Buddha used. There's more than 100 that he used. He used words like the unconditioned, the unborn, the deathless, the very difficult to see, the island, the refuge. There are many, many words that were used. I'm particularly fond of the emptiness teachings because that was the language that was used when I first came upon the Dharma and first sat a very long retreat, and my understandings came through the seeing of the emptiness of self and all things. And of course, Ajahn Buddhadasa, who was the teacher, one of the teachers of Christopher Titmus, and also my teacher, quite briefly my teacher, but my teacher because of that, Ajahn Buddhadasa is just one of the all-time great teachers of emptiness in Thailand from the Thai forest tradition. So forgive me for loving the emptiness teachings. So we're not talking about a barrenness. We're not talking about something desolate, which is the association we have with emptiness. We're also not talking about the absence of thought. So here, let me tell you a story from my own life to illustrate this. Our heart has the capacity to embrace our grief and our sorrow and to turn towards the difficult when we meet it in life. And I can remember this extraordinarily poignant and sad and heartfelt night that I spent with my daughter-in-law as my little grandson Finn was dying. He was dying from a brain tumor. He was 19 months old. And I was there with my daughter-in-law Summer, who was just, or is just, the most extraordinary mother. And she was there with her son, and she was in the bath, and she had him lying on her chest, and he was in pain. And she was stroking his little back until he calmed. And so it was just so sad. Finn was the most beautiful little boy. The moment he was out of pain, he was smiling and delighted and just a divine child, just lovely. And so there she was, my daughter-in-law. So she eased his pain, and then she said to me, "Radha, sometimes I think, why is my child dying? Why is this happening to me?" It's a big question to ask. And she was at the same time being so loving and so caring and so compassionate. And then she said, "But then I think, why not my child?" And she said, "When I think like this, I feel connected to every mother, every father, every person who has ever lost anybody." So this is to see the emptiness of self, the emptiness of the role of mother. It's not to cling to life, even when it's someone we love so dearly. So there she was with the child, and she saw the emptiness of self, she saw the emptiness of the role, she felt connected to all beings everywhere. This is universal love. She saw metta, she saw the universal. So the emptiness of self, the emptiness of claiming something as me and mine, When we just see that and let go of it, we touch and know for ourselves the universal nature of love. So the emptiness and the love are not separate. I can guarantee you they are not separate. So when we really see in this way, when we stop clinging, when we have the capacity to see beyond our self-view, of course she did not want her child to die, but she could see that it was the truth of things. As painful as that truth is and was. So there she was, feeling this extraordinary love. And it was a really sublime feeling. It's an unforgettable moment for me. I could just, the love was palpable in the room. The love for her son, the love for all beings. So this is the Dharma teaching. We let go of clinging. We see the emptiness of self. And the release is to love. The release is to the sublime and extraordinary quality we have as human beings to feel love, to know kindness, friendship. I didn't say it was easy, but it's possible. We can know it. We can know it directly. So emptiness is not bleak. It's warm. So coming back to the teachings, we can see rather easily, I think, that self has no fixed substance. It's not solid. It's shifting, it's changing, it's flowing. And so in this way, we see the emptiness of self. When we look at the objects of the world, we see that they exist dependent upon causes and conditions. And in that way, we see the emptiness of all things. And just to give you another example of this, to see the emptiness of objects is to see how a single object exists in dependence upon many things. For example, if we just take the bell, its metal came from the ground. Somebody had to get the metal out of the ground. Those people, of course, were breathing, living human beings who relied on all the resources that we have, the air, the earth, the plants, the food. They relied on, you know, their parents and parents before them to come into existence. The metal was taken out of the ground and then, of course, it was made in a foundry into this bowl by somebody. And then, of course, somehow the bowl came from Nepal or wherever it was found and came here. So when we really look, we can see everything in the bell. The universe is in the bell. So this is how we begin to look. We see in a different way, not from this narrow viewpoint of self and other, me and the other. And when this happens, we really touch into this sense of the unbound. When the Buddha was asked, so coming back to the teachings of self and not self again, when the Buddha was asked, does the self exist? He remained silent. He did not answer. And so then the person who came to him said, does the self not exist? And again, he did not answer. And then the questioner went away. You can imagine the whole scene, can't you? The person walks away, didn't get an answer. And then, of course, the Buddha turned to Ananda and he said, if I'd answered that the self exists, I would have encouraged the view of eternalism. And if I'd answered that the self does not exist, I would have encouraged the view of nihilism, the view that annihilation is the end of everything. So we cannot cling to either it is or it is not. So does the self exist or not exist? And in India, there's this wonderful thing called the four-cornered logic. And it goes like this. It says something is not, both, or neither. So we have nowhere to rest. It's just fantastic. So the mind gets turned upside down. We can't grasp anywhere. Because if we don't cling to it is, or it is not, both or neither, there is nowhere to cling. And so it's called the tetralemma. As if two options aren't enough. We all have trouble making decisions when we only see two options. But this way of thinking is extraordinary. It's wonderful. So coming back to general points and reflections about emptiness now. Emptiness is also not a background from which all things emerge. We tend to think of it in this way. It doesn't exist on its own, so it too is empty. Emptiness is also not awareness. It's not the absence of thought, it's not spaciousness, and as I said before, it's not essence. It's not the quietness of mind either. And when we start to see this, we really get a sense of the universal rather than just the self-interested view that we so often have in this life. And when we start to see in that way, we touch into a sense of the sacred. And here I want to read you a little verse from Krishnamurti. It's in the beginning of this rather lovely little book that I love called On God. And he says this, he says, there is a sacredness that is not of thought, nor of a feeling resuscitated by thought. It is not recognizable by thought, nor can it be utilized by thought. Thought cannot formulate it, but there is a sacredness untouched by any symbol or word. It is not communicable. It is a fact. So when we start to really see so clearly in this way, not clinging to anything, we touch and know for ourselves this extraordinary understanding of the sacredness of all things. And there's a great beauty in that. It's not vacuous, desolate. It just isn't. Sometimes when people hear the emptiness teachings, they have a misunderstanding. They say, well, if everything is empty, it really doesn't matter what I do. That is a misunderstanding. And here I have another story to illustrate this point. It's a rather more light-hearted story. I was in a little town where I used to live called Bangalore in Northern New South Wales in Australia. And at the time I had this almost brand new little black car that was rather cute. I parked it in the main street and I went across the road for a coffee. I forgot something from the car, so I came back. Just as I was coming back to the car, I saw this big utility with a tray on the back. We have lots of them in Australia where I live. Do you know what that is? A big, kind of huge, big four-wheel drive thing with a like a small truck. Reversing back and back and back and back and back towards my little car and crunch. The person driving had not made space for the tow ball on the back of his car. So the front of my car was crushed in. Okay, so there I am. Seeing this happen, the man, young man, got out of his car. And bless him, he did say, you know, well, actually I said, you've just hit my car. He happened to be somebody who'd come to my meditation classes. Yeah, you're getting the picture, aren't you? So, in Australia, what we do if there's an accident like this is we swap driver's license details because the cars are insured, but there's a fee to pay and the person who's at fault pays. In my view, he was clearly the person at fault. However, he didn't see it like that. And this is what he said to me. He said, "You're a Dharma teacher. Just let it go." It's true. That's what he said. And so there I was. What could I say? However, seeing the emptiness of all things doesn't mean that we don't have any responsibility for our actions. Of course we do, because there's an ethical foundation which we immediately see. He then said, it was really an extraordinary situation. He said, "Well, I don't have to pay for it because I told you I did it." It was like he couldn't see that he was somehow responsible for the action and the result. And then he offered another excuse. He said, "And anyway, Radha, I'm doing something good right now. I'm going to help a monk." And I thought, what is going on here? This is just not at all logical. But I thought about it. And I thought, okay, he's a young guy. He probably doesn't have much money, and neither do I, but I figured that I probably had more than him. So I did just let it go. I didn't send him a bill. I just let it be. But sometimes we can have this misunderstanding that you're a Dharma teacher, just let it go. I just thought it was priceless. So, coming back to the emptiness teachings and the difficulties that we face in life. There is another story I'd like to tell you, and I know that Deb and some of you others have heard it before, so please forgive me. I haven't actually told it for a long time, but it is the story of the moment or the time that we discovered that my little grandson would definitely die, that death was inevitable. We just didn't know when. He was diagnosed with a brain tumor when he was 5 months old, and every conceivable attempt was made to save his life, both with all kinds of allopathic medicine, with surgery, even with chemotherapy, but also all kinds of alternative things were done. And yet the condition of his body just did not support his little life. So the tumor would reduce and disappear, but a few cells would live, and then the cells would multiply again. And he, of course, then died. But prior to that, I was sitting on the floor on a rug, and as a family, we had just received the news that he would die. We didn't know when, but in the next month or two. As it happened, it was 5 months later. So I was sitting there. He crawled over to me. He could actually stand and walk by then, but as his illness progressed, he lost some of his functions. So he eventually couldn't walk, and he lost some of his vocabulary too. He could talk prior to the tumor really growing again. So he crawled over to me. He came and he sat on my lap. And he just turned his little head like this and put his head on my heart. And he just stayed like that, incredibly still, as if he could know my sorrow at this situation. You know, I was feeling extraordinary sorrow, as you can probably imagine. So I just put my hand on his head, and his head was on my heart. And we just stayed like that. He stayed so still for minutes, not just a few seconds. Everybody in the room saw. It was so touching and so sweet. And as that happened, everything just fell away. My role of grandmother just dissolved. My sense of grandchild just dissolved. The whole notion of living and dying in birth or death simply ended. And there was just love, meeting in the heart of emptiness, the emptiness of the grandmother, the emptiness of the grandchild. And in this touch, in this meeting, was such a timeless meeting, a timeless moment. I can feel it even now. This extraordinary kind of knowing flooded through my body, the knowing of the emptiness of all things, the knowing of that which could never be lost, the love that is untouched by birth and death. This is what it is to see and know the emptiness of all things. Then we know and understand the deathless teaching. We see that and feel and know that which is unborn and undying. And we see it and know it amid daily life, amid birth and death. So our liberation, our freedom, isn't found separately in some other realm. Emptiness is not that. Emptiness is not some kind of disassociated state. It's really being utterly with life as it is, with all of its pain and sorrow and sadness and difficulty, yet with a knowing of that which can never be lost, that which can never be broken, the knowing of our unbrokenness. So this is to meet in the heart of emptiness. Then we know the deathless Dharma. And this is, the Buddha called it the unborn supreme security. And it's the only comfort I know. So that's why I'm passing it on to you. So when we live with wisdom, we have the courage to really look and see at, and the most painful times of life are sometimes the times where we really touch the depth of the Dharma, or we really know and understand the truth of the Dharma. Let's just sit together. May all beings live with a hardened mind of non-clinging. May all beings see and know the emptiness of self and all things. And may all beings know universal love.